Walker, left corner, Jones fakes against Hayes, moves in on him, spins baseline left. Jones spins again, drives around Hayes, running hook shot, good!
Hollow into the circle, left side, Carr. Carr drives it, put it up and in!
Russell playing out front right now, Walker drives and scores! Little footsie Walker just took it from one end of the floor to the other.
Into the backcourt, gets away from Silas, into the fourth court, top of the key, Russell to the line, to the lane, to the hoop, got it!
Bobby, top of the key, 25-footer, goes! Bobby had it! 2 seconds to go.
Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Thank you for joining us on the Cleveland Cavaliers Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts, Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones.
The way you flip the box, gotta make it happen.
From the Cavaliers Radio Studios in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Alcorn along with Jim Jones. And yes, you heard those highlights from the Miracle of Richfield year. Tonight on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, we are going to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the Miracle of Richfield season. Jim Jones, I think we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. Joe Tate and, yes, your former teammate Footsie Walker are going to stop by and pay us a visit and talk about that Miracle of Richfield year.
Well, it'll be great to talk to Footsie and let him sit in the Legends chair and tell us some old stories. And Tim, I want you to lead into this. What was it like training camp, the first training camp where you and Jim Jones were roommates? Please ask him about that. that Tim, it was hilarious.
Okay.
I mean, it'll never happen again in NBA annals, but let Footsie describe it to you.
All right. I promise I will do that. So, again, 75-76 was the miracle year. This is the 45th anniversary of that very special season. So this will be the first of a few shows about the Miracle of Richfield season. So stay with us. The legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Cavaliers, Joe Tate, is up next on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams.
Five seconds to go. Pass out to Bingo. Bingo on the run. The gun. No. Rebound. Clement. Good. Clement got it. Clement got a rebound. And the game's over. Cleveland wins. 92-91. Unbelievable. Jimmy Clement rebounded a missed shot with 1 second to go.
Are you getting chills? Are you getting goosebumps? I am. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Alcorn, Jim Jones. And yes, we welcome in our first guest on this very special show. You just heard him, the voice of the Cavaliers for all those years, Joe Tate. He now sits in the Legends chair to talk about the Miracle of Richfield season, that 75-76 campaign in which this season we celebrate the 45th anniversary of the Miracle of Richfield. Joe, what a call. Now, of course, that was from the playoff series, and we'll talk about that as the year moves along. But, boy, I know I'm throwing you a softball here, but does this seem like 45 years ago?
Yeah, it does. It seems more like about 90 years ago.
Well, I want to set the table in regards to going into the miracle year. It was the Cavaliers' sixth year of existence. They started off that expansion year, a 15-win season, and then the uptick, 23 wins the following year, 32-50 in their third year, a little bit of a slide back in the fourth year, 29 wins. And then in that fifth year of existence, Joe, 40-42. So missed the playoffs by one game. We'll talk about that in a moment. But this team was definitely on the rise as Bill Fitch put the roster and the team together. What was his plan, Joe? What was his vision as far as constructing the roster for the Cavaliers from day one?
Well, I think, quite honestly, the first 4 years you mentioned created the Bill Fitch that Jim Jones and the rest of the guys had to deal with when we got up into the miracle year. He was pretty well entrenched in how he wanted to coach, and I'm sure Sweets would be the first guy to tell you that, you know, it wasn't all sweetness and light, but he certainly demanded some respect, and I think the players gave it to him, but without doubt, the catalyst came when we got Nate Thurman from the Chicago Bulls. That that was one of those moments that I will never forget, because he really he didn't come in to take Jim Jones' spot on the roster, that's for sure. He just came in to provide that 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the half and 5 minutes or so at the end of the game when necessary to provide the oomph that got us into the win column. And we started out very slowly, and then things picked up steam. And I think by the end of this regular season, everybody was having a good time, because winning will do that for you. And it's interesting. And the fact that I talk to Bill now all the time, and the other night we were talking, and he said, you know, I can still coach in this league. And I said, you think you can still coach in this league? How could you possibly coach in this league today? He said, with a gun. And that's the way he approached things. He coached that way in college. He coached that way in the pros. And I am sure that a lot of the guys didn't enjoy it all that much. But they did enjoy winning. And hey, the man sitting there with you today, Jim Jones, if fate hadn't dealt him dirty and he had broken his foot, we would have won it all that year. There is no doubt in my mind we were headed for the championship. And it just was one of those things of fate that happened, and unfortunately we didn't get there. But I'm sure people, Jim, who hear us talk about the miracle year, and then we'll look back and say, wait a minute, you didn't win anything. Well, believe me, after all that everybody came through, it was a miracle. And it really was the first year of legitimacy for that franchise.
Joe, I want to go back to the end of the previous season, because the Cavs were right on the cusp of the playoffs, the 74-75 campaign. They were within 3 seconds, in fact, of a playoff berth. The year closed out against the Kansas City Omaha Kings, and it was Freddie Foster that had a shot blocked that would end the Cavs' year.
We were in Omaha, Nebraska.
Who's going to take the shot? Clemens gets the ball. Clemens looks. Clemens, the bounce to Foster. Foster at the circle. Top of the key, a shot is blocked, and that's the ball game. It is all over. The final score, the Kansas City Omaha Kings, 95, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 94, and the season ends in Omaha, Nebraska.
So you missed the playoffs by a game, and I'll throw this out to both you guys, Joe and Jim. Does that kind of fuel a team, motivate a team going into the offseason as you got ready now for 75-76?
Well, you know,
go ahead, Joe.
The last home game we had played, we set an NBA record for attendance at a single regular season game when we beat the Knicks. And then we were in a situation whereby if we win at Omaha, the Cavs go to the playoffs. If we lose at Omaha, the Buffalo Braves go to the playoffs. And Buffalo was playing the New York Knicks. They played an early game, and we were at the later game out in Omaha, and we sat and listened as the Buffalo Braves played the last five guys on the New York Knicks roster that day. And there was no question about who was going to win that game. So now it's just a question of we had to win the game. And Ron Behagen was the guy who drilled the ball right back into Freddie Foster's face, and with it the whole season, right? Oh, whack.
But, Jim, did that motivate you guys into the offseason?
It did, but can we go back just a little bit, Tim, and set that up a little bit? Because that play during a timeout was not for Freddie Foster, the late Freddie Foster, who's deceased now. That play wasn't for him. we had set up some other shooters and some other possibilities. And maybe Clemens should take a little bit of the blame, because he passed it to Freddie, and Freddie wasn't supposed to take that shot. Now, that's a shot that Joe and I know that Fred could make if he had time. It was to the right or left at the top of the key, but it was a stiff shot, and any time somebody contested him, he would hurry the shot. And he wasn't supposed to take that shot. And that's all I remembered. I said, why did he take that? We had time on the clock and everything. You know. But going back farther than that, just to support what Joe said, especially about Bill Fitch. Bill Fitch couldn't coach these kids today because they make too much more money than he does. I mean, these kids are totally different from the kind of kids that we were. And Bill had a relationship with most of us because he'd either coached against us or he knew our college coaches because he had coached in the Big Ten. And the first place I stayed when I came to Cleveland, I slept in Bill Fitch's bed. Of course, he and his wife weren't in there, but but I slept in Bill Fitch's bedroom my first night in Cleveland. You know, that's how close we were. He knew Al McGuire. We were all friends. So we had a relationship. But Joe could tell you about the many battles that Fitch and I used to have on the sidelines during timeouts. but in the end, it was all about respect, and it was all about getting the job done, and we started to win games.
That's awesome. Tell you what, guys, we got to sneak in a quick break. When we come back, we'll delve further into the first part of the Miracle of Richfield year, the 45th anniversary of that season this year. So, quick timeout on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams.
Clemens looks and waits, flips to Snyder. Snyder sideline left. Snyder on the dribble drive to the hoop. Put it up, score! Snyder scores with 4 seconds to go! And the Bullets take time! Cleveland 87! And Bullets 85 with 4 seconds to go.
Man, I'm telling you, the hair on my arms just standing up. What a call. And, of course, we continue on as we celebrate the 45th anniversary of the Miracle of Richfield, the legendary Joe Tate with those awesome calls. Now, of course, that call from the playoffs, the run the gun, Snyder. Oh, my goodness, Snyder on the dribble drive. Joe, I know you've had a lot of legendary calls over the years, but the miracle calls, are those the ones that as you still run into people, they bring those up?
Well, the one that gets the most recall is the three-pointer that Craig Elo hit at Christmas time. And I've listened to the tape, and I have no idea why I said it. It just popped in. I said, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and he comes from Lubbock, Texas. And, it was just one of those things that popped in and popped out, and it really fit the moment. That is probably the call that people remember more than any of the others. But I do have people say that they recall the calls in the because there was no television. You know, there was just radio, and That meant if you wanted to follow the Cavs, you had to follow us on radio. Washington, they did have TV, but to show you just how they had to put it together at the last minute, their color analyst for that was Sonny Jurgensen, the quarterback.
Oh, so I did not know that.
Yeah, they were having a heck of a time just putting a crew together because it came on top of them, and there was no local TV at all.
Guys, as I look at the Cavs roster from the miracle year, and of course we know all the names, Jim Jones, my broadcast partner, co-host here, Campy, AC, Bingo, Snyder, Footsie, who we'll have a little bit later, Footsie Walker, Jimmy Clemens, Jim Brewer. Man, just some quality basketball players. But I don't really see that superstar, the megastar. This was more of a collective unit than a, you know, that's a LeBron team or that's a Magic team, correct? You guys both want to comment on that?
Well, actually, I looked in the book this morning just for fun to see if any of our guys made it in the top 10 in any of the categories for scoring, rebounds, assists, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody made it. We had seven guys, though, score between 8.5 and 15.8 points per ball game, and Jim Jones led the way with that scoring average. But it was a team effort all the way, and everybody did their little thing. Sweets and I were talking a little bit about Jim Brewer before we started the show, and you know, Brew has some big moments. I remember a night down in New Orleans where he just took over defensively in a ball game, and we're playing at University of the South, which was on a raised platform, and if you drove too hard and far, you went right off the floor into space.
You've got a good memory. Oh, I hadn't thought about that probably since it happened. Oh, my goodness.
I don't think you'd want to remember that, Jim.
Jim, your thoughts on that, though, that there really wasn't that superstar player per se.
Well, there's a couple things you got to remember. The Cavs had been a losing team, so they were getting pretty decent draft picks. But they were all kids, if you really think about it, they were all kids from the Midwest. Luke Whitty, Austin Carr. The only one that probably wasn't from the Midwest was maybe Bingo. But the majority of the kids on that team were either from the Big Ten or they were from independents that played a lot of basketball in the Midwest. And Bill Fitch had a great feel for talent. He had a system that was not difficult to learn, so we sort of gelled pretty easily, and we had tremendous respect for each other. And Joe can tell you better than me, because he did pro football, that this was a football town, and they would never let you forget it until that particular year when we were selling out with 20,000. Nick Meletti was getting Stevie Wonder, Frank Sinatra, come on, to Cleveland to appear out at his big-time arena. And Joe can tell you better than me, because he knew those guys in upper office better than I did. But they were finding it very challenging. They were very challenged to make payroll every month, you know. So.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you guys about, I mean, this team, the Miracle team, really didn't come roaring out of the blocks. I mean, they lost four of their first five. They were 1-4, 5-10, 9-14. So it took a while to get things rolling.
Well, it was about Nate. It was about Nate Thurman.
Yep.
And we weren't winning. I was playing pretty decent. Starting five was playing pretty decent. But when they took me out of the game and Jim Brewer, they could never take us both out at the same time. We were both at pretty good size. You know, we would struggle. But when we got Nate Thurman, and I saw the respect that he was given, even at that late stage in his career, Tim, he still had that fire. And he was such a gentleman off the court, with the Stutzy brim hat, the plaid, Glenn plaid jackets and blazers, three gold chains around his neck. You could smell his cologne if you got on the elevator and he just got off. I mean, he was just a classic old school NBA player, and we played hard for him. Joe can tell you that.
Well, that's the truth. And, you know, he was the gentleman's gentleman. I know Bill Fitch, one time, we were eating at the restaurant at the hotel after a game out in Oakland, and Nate came in with a beautiful young lady and sat down, and Fitch said, if you really want to find out how to treat a woman when you take her out, watch Nate Thurman, because he is the consummate gentleman. And yep, he did. It was a lesson in how to be totally attentive, and he was, well, I'm sorry, but the whole club was really top-flight people. You start mentioning the draft choices and all, Jim, those were good folks. I mean, those were people you wanted to know personally, not just professionally. And it was a great combination. And as you say, Thurman was the guy who got it all together and got things rolling, and the rest of the team just followed suit, and it was a memorable year.
Well, I mentioned you were 9-14, or the Cavs were 9-14. That meant they went 40-19 after that 9-14 record. Think about that. Wow. Well, Joe, this has been a great trip down memory lane. As I said, we've got more Miracle of Richfield season shows coming. So this isn't your only appearance on Cavs HQ. You and Jim and I will get together again down the line, and we'll talk about more about this team. I know you've got some more great Nate stories, so we'll delve into those. But this has been a real treat. And as I said, hearing those calls, man, goosebumps and the hair raised on my arm. That's awesome.
Now, is Sweets going to be talking to Footsie Walker today?
Yes.
Yes, I will.
All right. I remember one of the greatest quotes I have ever heard from anybody in a Cavalier uniform. You remember, Sweets, when we used to travel, everybody wore whatever they wanted to wear, sweatsuits, blue jeans. Well, then we got Walt Frazier from the Knicks. And Clyde walks into the airport for the first time, and he's got the hat and the mink coat. And
yep.
Footsie Walker took one look at him and turned to Fitch and said, well, there goes the dress code.
We ought to just do a show with you two telling stories. I mean, this could be classic. All right, Joe, we do got to take the break. You know how that goes in the world of radio, but as I said, this will be the first of several appearances for you.
Hey, great talking to you, Jim. Great to talk to you again, and I hope we can do it again before we're into the next season.
Oh, we're going to do a couple more. All right, thanks to Joe Tate. We're going to take a quick time out. As Joe said, he teased it. Footsie Walker, a part of that Miracle of Richfield team as we celebrate the 45th anniversary of that club. He's coming up next on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Over the weekend, the Cavaliers and the Cleveland Food Bank handed out boxes of food and PPE packs to 350 local families during a drive-through food distribution at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. This was part of Team Up for Change and a long-standing partnership between the Cavs and the Food Bank, as well as a continuation of the Cavs' efforts to help those in need during the pandemic. Collectively, the Cavs and Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse organization has funded over 1 million meals through multiple agencies across our region. Cavs in the Community, brought to you by Discount Drug Mart. We'll be right back with the second half of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams.
We've got Russell playing out front right now. Walker drives and scores. Little Footsie Walker just took it from one end of the floor to the other. 76-68, Cleveland.
Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn along with Jim Jones. Huge thanks to the guys on the other side of the window. Marty Allen, Kurt McLaughlin, Leo Simone. They're racking up those great Joe Tate highlights from the Miracle of Richfield season 45 years ago. The Miracle of Richfield. So it's great to talk about one of the most memorable seasons in Cavs history. And a huge thank you again to Joe Tate, who joined us in segment number one. And now Jim Jones, a teammate of yours, we welcome him into the Legends Chair, as we call it. Hopefully Footsie Walker is using the footrest on the Legends Chair. Maybe it's a recliner, as Footsie now joins us. Are you using the footrest, Footsie?
That's exactly where I'm at, man.
Well, again, we are looking back on this Miracle of Richfield season, and as I explained before we got rolling here, we kind of want to look at the season as far as the early part and what the thought process was going into the year. The Cavs had come oh so close the year before in making postseason. So, Footsie, I know it was a long time ago, but do you recall that near miss the year before kind of motivating you as you got ready for the next season?
For sure. I mean, because like I said, you know, when I seen that team and I seen the players, you know, and I knew what kind of chemistry we had there, you know, and we just, you know, taking a little time to blend, you know, and get together with each other, you know, because, you know, when I first came there, it was we had, I don't know, maybe three or four, five, maybe guys that came onto the team. So I know we had a good team there and a good nucleus there. We had good players, and it was just a matter of gelling and putting everything together. And that season, like you say, before that miracle, I mean, I knew we were on our way, you know, just a few more adjustments that we made, and there we were, you know.
Jim?
Well, at that time, Tim, Footsie was a new breed of guard. You know, there's always great exceptions, mm-hmm. like Tiny Archibald, you know, 6 foot, you know, lead the league in scoring and assists. But no one else was really taking in guys that were 5 foot 10 and who mm-hmm. were known more for their defense than their offense. And Foots Walker changed a lot of that around our league, because when he came into the games, the pace of the game picked up. His ability off dribble penetration was unbelievable. And if he was in the open floor, he could find the open man, or he could take it to the rim. So he put a lot of pressure on teams and a lot of people around our league. Everybody wanted a Footsie Walker type player. But the other thing that Foots had, he was a great defender. You could be 6'5", 6'6", he would give you heck trying to get that ball up the floor. He played the passing lanes. He, you know, he just really understood what it took to win, and he understood the game. Footsie, I really appreciate you, but I wanted to tell Tim that mostly I appreciate you when you first came, how you used to get me up every morning out at the hotel.
Hey, Jim, I tell you what, that was an experience, but it was great, you know, because like I said, Jim was my roommate that first camp when I came, and so we, you know, sometimes Jim didn't want to get up, so I had to go over there, come on, Jim, and, you know, almost begging to get up. I said, we got to get up, man. We got to get to practice, man. So, you know, we remained good friends and you know, and all that through the years. And just getting back to what Jim was saying, when I came into the league, I came in at the right time, because the league was just turning over from, like, smaller guards from big guards. And so I guess, you know, with Calvin Murphy and they had several guys. Tiny Archibald was in the league then. They had quite a bit of guys in the league. So the league was just turning over. So, I mean, I hit it at the right time, you know, when I came in. And, I mean, I came in with a 6'5 heart, first of all, you know. And that's
yes,
what you
kind
of had to have in that league, you know. You had to yep. come in. You had to be strong. You had to not take any prisoners. And like I say, and that's the kind of player that I was, you know, and always have been, you know, hustled, worked hard, you know, and did what the coach say. And, you know, I hit it right at the right time.
Again, we're talking.
Tim.
Oh, go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Tim, I don't want to cut you off, but Footsie almost got me into two fights, at least the fight a game.
Oh, you had
Wes Unsell.
You had nothing to do with it, Jim?
Nothing. Wes Unsell, Kevin Coonert, Dwight Davis, even Nate Thurman one time, because Footsie was great defending off the ball. So when they would try to set picks on him, they would move or throw or hit him with an elbow, because he was so clever and quick that he could come right at the screen and then go around. And those guys started laying him out. And I said, you know what? I got to protect this guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so think about it. But you remember those little scraps I had with those guys?
Oh, I know. You did, Jim. And I was glad you came to my rescue, man. Because, I mean, those guys then, you know, they weren't no 6'9 and 200 pounds. They were like 6'9, 300 pounds and carrying on. So, and when I first came into the league, just tell a quick story. The first year I came in, we had no preseason game. So as being a rookie, I had to go through rookie camp, and then I had to go through veterans camp, which we did not have any preseason that year. So I came in at like about 172 pounds, and once the camp was over, I probably was about 160 pounds. And so I used to tell the story to some of the guys. I said, these guys are sagging their pants now. I said, my back pockets was touching in. You know, I was good, man.
But see, I want to ask you, going back to this, to the miracle year and this roster, the way it mm-hmm. was constructed, I think guards always have a little bit of a different perspective of a team than big men, because they play looking mm-hmm. at the basket and so forth. What did you see as the strength of this Cavs team, especially going into the year?
Well, what I've seen was that, like I say, we had a good 10 to 9 people that could come in on that floor and play at any time.
It was deep, yeah.
And then we had the nucleus we had, too, was that, you know, we had different tempos. Like the first team had a tempo that they, you know, that they used and whatnot. And then once we subbed, like, you know, me and Campy and, you know, whoever came off the bench, we had a different tempo. So I think our tempo was different, but both of them was affected, you know. So, I mean, when looking at that, you know, you, like I said, you could have people step in at any time and take somebody's spot and wouldn't lose a beat.
Jim?
Yeah, you know, Footsie, I was thinking about those times, and I remember people don't realize how effective Nate Thurman was for us.
To get
Nate, and I know sometimes you used to take him home, you know, because you guys lived in that mm-hmm. same complex over there. Mm-hmm. Just talk a little bit about the effect of Nate Thurman on our team.
Oh man, Nate, when we got Nate, man, I'm telling you that. I mean that ripped everybody up, you know, because this was like one of the main spots. You know, that we needed, you know.
Yep.
You know, once Jim came off the floor, I mean, Nate came in and he shut things down. And, you know, he set some tremendous picks for Bingo or Campy, whoever was on the floor. And then just being with Nate and listening to, you know, some of the stories, you know, he was talking about his friend and Gus Johnson when they played together in high school. And I mean, just the things in the league, he talked about, man. I mean, he was just an inspirational talker. I mean, if you listen to him, and if you know Nate, he was just low-key. And like I say, he just gets his point across, man. And then us driving and riding home together and talking every day and just talking about the league and just talking about all kind of different things, man. And like I say, Nate was, I miss that guy, man, I tell you.
I do too, Foots.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout. I want to delve more into this when we come back. So, again, huge thank you, Clarence Footsie Walker, joining us here on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. We're coming back with more of Footsie right after this. Welcome back to Cavs HQ. It's presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, Jim Jones, and, again, sitting in the Legends chair on this very special program is Footsie Walker, of course, part of that Miracle of Richfield team 45 years ago. That team took the floor at the old Richfield Coliseum. Wait, Footsie, I just heard you say, wow. Yeah, it doesn't seem like 45 years ago, does it?
No, it don't, man. Like, man, it kind of, like people say, it's, you know, kind of telling your age a little bit now.
Hey, I wanted to follow up on the very ending of our previous segment where you talked about kind of getting in the car with Nate and driving back home after a game. You guys mm-hmm. live close to each other. So you were a second-year player in the Miracle Richfield year, and here's this wily veteran, and they talk about veteran leadership. What did Nate impart to you? What was just the advice? I mean, he's a big center. You're a small guard, and yet what did you learn from Nate?
Well, I just learned I learned from Nate was just, like I say, just being tough, man. I mean, you know, like not taking no prisoners, you know, and, you know, being to practice early, you know, staying to practice late. I mean, just doing the little things to, you know, to stay in the game, you know. And like I say, Nate talked about all kind of, like he talked about himself growing up and, you know, his childhood, you know, childhood life kind of, you know, and brothers and, you know, and like I say, most of us kind of grew up in kind of the same kind of situations, you know, didn't have much and, you know, just made it with what they had, you know, and just, you know, Nate was just like, you know, just be appreciative of what you had and just, you know, just keep pushing forward. And like I say, one day you're going to be a good player in this league, you know, and, you know, all kind of different things that he talked about that some of the teammates, you know, we talked about how Austin was, you know, how Campy was, you know, how Jim, and that he was so excited to get to this team. Plus, he was close to his hometown, you know, so he really enjoyed that, and he enjoyed just getting back here. And I mean, just little things that was, you know, that Nate just threw in, you know, that really helped you along your way, you know, encouragement.
That's awesome, Jim.
Yeah, he used to talk to me sometimes. He and I would talk, and there was no confrontation, there was no competitiveness. We both wanted to mm-hmm. win. I wanted to be Nate Thurman. When I was in high school, I used to watch Nate Thurman play those great games San Francisco would play against Philadelphia. 76ers, and those were great physical games. I watched him against Wilt Chamberlain, you know, how he held his own and how he held his own against Kareem. And he used to tell me in the summers, a couple of summers, he and Wilt went to Europe. Listen to this, for the summer. You know, they went, yeah, right. They were all over Europe. They did it a couple times. And I could see that in Nate because Futsa tell you, he had class. He had a big diamond on his left hand. He had plaid and tweed jackets. He had those little stingy brims. Man. And anytime he talked to your wife or your girlfriend, it was nothing but class. He would always say, Mrs. Jones, you look fantastic tonight. And he meant it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just class. Yes. Old school class.
Yes, man. Like I say, just adding to that, man, I mean, you know, like I say, Jim brought it up. Just, I mean, Nate dressing, man. I mean, them suits was fitting like, you know, somebody had painted them on him, you know. I mean, nothing was loose. It was just slim and trim, man, and had the tie to match, man, and the glasses going on. Then he had that kind of deep voice, you know, when he talked to, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, man, you know, who am I talking to? I thought maybe he was a lawyer or something, you know. Just, I mean,
that's right.
I mean, unbelievable, man. And then, you know, when he go to San Francisco, you know, he was driving his car, driving his Rolls around, you know, and driving on the other side, you know. It's like, man, this, you know, man, I said, Nate's got it made. And he meant Nate's something else, man. But just, like I say, just... you know, not, I mean, just a straight up guy, man. I mean, no, you know, no arrogance, you know, with him or nothing. He treated everybody the same, everybody good, you know, I don't care who it was or where you were at. I mean, we used to go out to eat places sometimes, you know, and I mean, Nate was just, I mean, people were just in awe, you know, especially for his height anyway, people would see him, you know, and just a classy guy, man, like Jim said.
Footsie, one of the things I wanted to ask you, and Jim, you certainly can chime in here. You know, you're going into the Miracle of Richfield season off that disappointing end the year before. There were no cell phones. There was no texting or Zoom calls. How did you guys stay in contact with each other? And how did you, you know, blend and get that chemistry together during the off seasons back then?
Well, I can start, Jim. What we did was this is what's so amazing about that team was that everybody was together. I mean, we did a lot of things together. You know, I mean, we'd go out to the movies or something, or we'd go out to eat, or we would go by each other's house. I mean, it wasn't like you had to let them know that you was coming. I mean, if you come to the house and bam on the door, I've been to Jim's house plenty of times and just bam on the door and come on in. It ain't like you, you know. What you doing here? Nothing like that. No matter what time it was or whatever. So, and the other thing with that team that I was on there with those guys there, I mean, I would have went to war with those guys because that's the kind of team that we had. That's the kind of guys that we had. And just say, I'm gonna just say this right quick. But just the difference was when I got traded to New Jersey, it was like after a game. I mean, it was like somebody threw a bomb in the locker room. Everybody just flew. It was gone. You know, no go eat or no come by the house or nothing. It was strange for me because for being in Cleveland for 6 years and everybody was just together, no problems, you know, all the wives, girlfriends, whatever, got along. I mean, you know, the organization was great, you know, with Nick Mulledy, and Coach Fitch and them. Everybody was, you know, it was just a great organization. You could go up to the, you know, to the office at any time, no problem or nothing. So, no, that's kind of what I've seen, too, with this team and this organization.
Jim, quick thoughts on that? Just the chemistry and the bonding of this team?
Yeah, it was all about chemistry. You know, teams talk about it, but they don't really describe it. A big part of chemistry isn't on the floor. It's guys getting together, developing relationships off the floor. You know, our wives knew each other, girlfriends knew each other, wives and girlfriends knew each other. We cooked for each other. We had house parties where everybody could eat and dance and just, you know, all of those things that we did back then, they don't do now. You know, this is a different type of player. Just like when, you know, when you talk to Joe Tate, I know Joe Tate could tell you, you know, about how different the players are today versus the players when we played. And I just want to say one other thing about Fitz Walker. Out of any player that I've ever played with, and that includes Europe, and even on my Laker teams that I've played on, No, Footy has had the most competitive spirit. He was always the toughest because he wasn't the biggest. He used to always tell me, hey, Jim, I can't go back home, so I got to make this team. You know, I'm from West Georgia. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to make it, man. And he accepted the challenge. He had a great career. I have one disappointment, Footy. I always thought that you could have been a coach.
Because you had the intellect.
Well, again, Footsie, I cannot thank you enough for joining us for this very special show. The memories that have come back, not only for Jim, and we had Joe Tate on earlier, but I'm sure for our listeners, have just been tremendous. We really appreciate it. Thank you much, and let's hope this the first of a few occasions where you sit in that legend's chair with your footsies up on the recliner.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys very much. And, Jim, thank you, man.
Yep, and I'll talk to you. Footsie, I'll call you before the week is out.
Okay, man. Love you, my brother.
All right. Love you too, bro.
All right, guys. Okay. We'll take quick time out. When we come back, we'll put the finishing touches on this week's edition of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, Jim Jones. Now, you're wondering why we're playing a little Frank Sinatra. We did the 45th anniversary of the Miracle of Richfield. This is the anniversary of Frank Sinatra opening the Coliseum 46 years ago. Yes, that legendary concert of Old Blue Eyes. He opened up the Coliseum 46 years ago. Boy, Jim, how special was that show? You know, my mentor and my father figure, Joe Tate, and your former teammate, Footsie. How fun was that?
Yeah, it was special. It was special because Footsie is one of those guys I've always looked at as a little brother. But the players today can learn a lot from this guy. Total humility, exceptional competitiveness, and just a good character person. Foots Walker, I love him.
Yeah, well, you could just sense that through that telephone line with Footsie. It was great to have him. And again, thanks to Joe Tate. Marty Allen, thanks to you. Kurt McLaughlin, to you. Leo Simone, great big thanks to you. And, of course, the biggest thanks goes to you, the listeners. We hope you enjoyed it. A trip down memory lane, the Cavs' Miracle of Richfield season. So until we talk again on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, so long, everybody. On the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was dark.